Welcome, my friends. I am Dave Champion. This is my co-host, Bill Carnes, and together we are totally unprepared. So what are we going to talk about today?
Well, Happy New Year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we did miss last week.
Yeah. You had things to do?
I had family in town, man. I think everybody I was blood related to, it seemed, was in town. So the house was packed. It was a lot of fun. Had a great time. Christmas, New Year's, all that stuff was a good time. Except on Christmas Eve, I started experiencing a problem with the tooth.
Oh, that's right.
That was a Thursday.
Talk about the wrong day.
The wrong day.
Well, I feel
and,
like
I understand
not,
some.
I may not be here next week. We'll see.
Yeah.
I don't know if
I
the
understand
audience
your potty is broken.
Something like that. Thank you for that eloquent. I don't know if the audience has noticed. I sit here sometimes and I'm like bloated out to here.
Yeah.
It turns out my bladder is like 1.5 times its normal size, and it's backed up into my kidneys, and I'm in my 50s. It's the male prostate thing. So I've got to go get Roto-Rooter. That's going to be lovely. But hopefully with the new technology with the laser, you're in and out.
One and done.
Well, yeah, you're in and out the same day, and so hopefully I won't miss next week.
I forgot to mention to you, we have a mutual friend, young man, that you used to know who worked at a motorcycle shop in Southern California, the Honda dealer. You know who I'm talking about. He came out, was an instructor out at Frontside. First name is Michael. Last name begins with the letter Perez.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's had, at 35 years old, complete, total, and utter kidney failure.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's happened over the last couple of years. So I actually have realized that I am a possible match. So I am going through the medical screening, if you will. It's all on hold at the moment. For the recipient, he's the recipient.
Wow.
But as a donor, I have actually put myself on there as a potential donor for him to get an actual live working kidney.
Good man. Good.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that.
You can't have yours go, I only have
one. No. You know, fortunately, even though my kidneys are they're filled with water, they're not supposed to be now. Well, fluid, not water. I'm just that far over the
threshold.
Yeah. As far as kidney function. So, you know, I'm nowhere near in the straits he is, and mine is easily correctable.
So we've had a couple of exciting things happen, not in the last couple of weeks since we did our last show, but in the last few days.
Uh-huh.
One of which is the whole Oregon, I guess, sit-in, standoff, whatever it is. So somebody's sitting, somebody's standing, and it's a thing. And then the other one is Obama talking about executive orders regarding, gun control is what it is.
Well, you know, on the guys on Oregon, you know, I noticed that the media seems to be pretty much against these guys, right? That's the tone of the articles I read.
Sure.
I'm old enough to remember when doing like a sit-in at a government building was considered cool.
You know somebody who actually sat in an armed sit-in at a federal building in 1973?
Wow.
Eric Holder.
Yes, he did. That's true.
Our most recent attorney general.
Yeah. And now it's like, bad, evil, extremist. Yeah,
imagine that. So we have three of the Bundy sons who are from this area, Southern Nevada, that we're in. Three of the Bundy sons are up there kind of leading this whole thing. The Hammond family had the father and the son, they were on adjoining federal land, set controlled brush fires so that they didn't have invasive plants and weeds and such come on their ranch and endanger their
goats. Their story. Yeah. Government story is different, of course.
So they ended up serving time for arson. The father did 3 months, the son did a year. And as it turns out, the federal statute is a minimum of 5 years.
Right.
So a federal judge called them to go back, said, look, we made a mistake. That judge made a mistake. You have to spend 5 years. They fought it up through the Ninth Circuit, and they lost. They submitted a petition to the Supreme Court. They denied hearing it. So it goes back to the Ninth Circuit's decision, which was you got to serve the remainder of your time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what brought the attention to here. But now it's gone to the states are in control of their land unless it falls under the federal constitution that says no more than 10 square miles for forts, docks, shipyards, military use, blah, blah, blah. And they control some 86% of Nevada, 53% of Oregon. And
so there's no constitutional authority.
There is none. So what they're trying to do really is get the people, especially out west, to recognize this and and call attention to it and get pressure on the federal government to end this practice and start returning this land back to the people in the states.
Right. And we know how heavy-handed BLM can be.
Yes, we do.
I saw some people commenting BLM is they're not extreme. They are extreme. They are extremists. What they do to the miners, what they do to farmers, what they do to ranchers is completely uncalled for. They destroy entire livelihoods. And here, right here in this town in Pahrump, do you remember in Tony DiMeo's early years, there were BLM officers pulling people over in Pahrump for traffic violations? Tony actually got national news coverage for this because he told the director of the BLM for this area, he said, "Your guys are not to pull over citizens of Nye County on Nye County roads. You have your turf. This is our turf." And the director of BLM said, no, there's like this cushion zone.
Right.
And he said, yes, if they're doing something that's cognizable by BLM, but you're not pulling over my people, you're not pulling over the citizens of Nye County for traffic infractions, right? And so the director said, well, we're going to keep doing it. And Tony, the sheriff at the time, said, well, then I'm going to arrest your people. And the director of BLM said, then we'll roll our SWAT team. And Tony said, then we'll roll our SWAT team, right? And he said, so we're going to have SWAT teams shooting it out because you want to overstep your authority and pull people over for traffic violations on county roads. This is how out of control these schmucks are.
They had big issues with a rancher in the northern part of Nye County where I think it was Division of Forestry. I don't know if it was BLM. I forget who it was. But they were saying that this rancher, his cattle were trespassing on federal land where they'd had grazing rights for multiple generations. Mm-hmm. So they were taking those cattle, seizing them,
right,
selling them and keeping the money. No. Violates Bill of Rights.
Oh, yeah?
It's all completely unconstitutional. So they had a big headbutting of that. That came to an end. So, we have that. Of course, let's also chat about Obama's speech that he had yesterday. I watched it live on Fox News of his intended forthcoming executive actions regarding guns, background checks, and such as that. Now, and an interesting thing that people have been saying about doctors and NCIS.
Yeah, all over I've seen the news, all different news sites, social media. Doctors, under Obama's proposed executive order particulars, doctors are now going to be able to report people to NICS. That's the background system that the FBI maintains.
NICS, I said NCIS, National Information, National Criminal Information System.
NICS, there's an I in there.
Whatever.
Yeah, that's why I just call it NICS.
The background thing, the national background thing.
When you go to a gun store and you present your driver's license, you fill out a form 4473, it's the NICS system that gets access to find out if you are ineligible, right? And
some dude named Nick runs it.
There's this thing about the doctors. Your doctor is going to be able to report you. The headlines are completely adverse to what the reality is. All that's going on with this supposed executive action, by the way, I'm not supporting them or not supporting them. I'm just clarifying what's happening and not happening. Everybody thinks that this is this big, massive federal system, right? It's not. There's a federal background database. And federal firearms license, just federal firearms license holders, are not allowed to release a firearm to anybody unless they've cleared that database. However, the states are under no obligation to participate in the database. I don't think most people understand that. What empowers NICS is the states choosing to participate. Now, as far as medical stuff, if you've been adjudicated to be a danger to yourself or others, if you've been involuntarily committed, if you've been found to be unable to attend to your own affairs, now where do all those things get determined? In a court of law, right?
Court of law, yep.
Which is state government, right? So the states participate by sending that information to NICS. Okay. There are some organizations that hold mental health records that are controlled by HIPAA. Okay, that's the medical privacy thing. So some of these organizations that have information that in theory should go to NICS, they haven't been sending to NICS because they're HIPAA controlled and there was no clarification on whether they'd be violating HIPAA to send the information to NICS. There is a HIPAA exemption for law enforcement, but not for NICS. Okay, so really, the long story short, 98%, that's probably an overstatement, about 90% of what goes to NICS comes from state governments. But there are occasionally private enterprises that have information and they should be NICS reporting. Okay? And they're not. And they're not because they're afraid they're going to get burned for violation of HIPAA. So the adjustment in the by the executive order does not command them to do anything. Because remember, this whether you participate in NICS is up to the state. Right? It says if you participate in NICS and you fit this criteria, this narrow criteria, we will not slap you under HIPAA. That's the it doesn't involve doctors. It involves record people who maintain records. Because I can't say, if I was a psychiatrist, I can't say, Bill, I think you're a little screwy. Let me let NICS know. As you pointed out, where's the due process there?
Right.
We were talking about this briefly at lunch, and that was Bill's comment. Where's the due process there? And it would be violative, yes?
It would.
That's not at all what's happening.
The thing that gets me is this is, as I see it, just me talking here, as I see it, one more slight notch towards the government being able to say who can and who cannot own a gun, totally void of due process. Now, Obamacare is a good way of doing that. If the government controls the healthcare system, if they have oversight over healthcare and healthcare records, the government can and will at some point in time decide who can and cannot own a gun based on mental health records. And they can also, from there, in my opinion, find a way to test everybody for that and decide whether you can or cannot actually own a gun.
What does one of our good friends always say? Whatever power you're going to give the government, imagine that it's in the hands
of your worst enemy.
Of your worst enemy.
Right.
And so when you talk about saying that you can't own a gun or Noah can't own a gun or I can't own a gun because of our mental state, okay? If it's the government that's involved in making that determination, or maybe even others that work, say, in the interest of anti-gun forces, it can potentially be something that's ugly.
And I just see this as another click, another tick of that second hand towards an hour-long episode of getting in that direction. As long as these things go unchecked, and how do you boil a frog a little bit 1 degree at a time? All right, yeah, that's okay. We'll put up with that. Next one, that's okay. We'll put up until eventually we have what we have.
Right, and that is my concern as well. But I'm sure, like me, you don't want to see people who are out there walking around with guns.
I don't. But if they get a gun and they go nuts, what's a way to stop them, Dave?
Right there.
Pull out a gun and shoot them. We'll be back next segment.
We are back, and now it's time for what is up with people needing to overcomplicate and contrive all sorts of crazy explanations when the explanation is right there, right in front of them, clear cut and simple. The issue that I want to talk about where this applies is the change in temperament of society towards police officers. Now, 2015 has been a rough year in how law enforcement is looking at the public and most especially how the public is looking at law enforcement. And as I read commentaries and I look at social media and I talk to people that I know, I hear the craziest explanations for why the temperament of the public towards law enforcement has changed. And I hear not only is convoluted, but a myriad of things that are absolute nonsense. And the force that has changed the public's temperament towards law enforcement can be summed up not with a big long-winded dissertation, not with an explanation, but with a single word. That word is video. That's the difference. Let me give you an example. When I was growing up, and over the vast majority of my life, if two police officers were in an alley and they did something to somebody that they alleged was a suspect, and there was a question about what happened, the cops would say, "We did this, and this is why we did it." And if their suspect said, "That didn't happen at all! That's insane! I didn't do that! And they did this to me without provocation," nobody listened to him. Because you had the bold, righteous men with badges telling you under oath exactly what happened in that alley. And all of society believed them. And that was a very pat way of things going down. And everybody said, oh, criminals are non-credible. And police officers are the credible ones. And so it was very soothing. It was non-stressful. It didn't cause any tension in society. Everybody believed the cops. Nobody believed the suspects. And of course, the suspects were never $150,000 a year bank managers. They were never that, right? It was always indigent people. It was poor people. It was blacks in the ghettos. It was low economic Hispanics. And basically, the vast majority of what was then white America, if there's something wrong, let the cops sort it out. You know, we're not going to get involved in this. He was Hispanic. He was black. He's poor. He's indigent. Yeah, they're just troublemakers. And that was the way society was as I was growing up. And it lasted right up until video. And, of course, the most famous of that is the Rodney King video. That was the one that I think changed America fundamentally. And since that time, there's been more videos and more videos. And now, anybody who's got one of these has a video camera. And it's funny because I hear people all the time talking about, you know, well, most cops are good cops. Perhaps. We have two problems with that. First of all, if you go to the various sites like Policing the Police, Filming Cops, Cop Blocks, there's oodles of them. And you look at the videos of what cops are doing. And for instance, I was just in preparation for this yesterday, I was on the Filming Cops page. And there's not like a handful of things posted a week. There's 30 or 40 items, videos of cops doing wrong posted a day on one single page. And remember, these organizations are only getting a small fraction of all the video that's captured of cops doing things they shouldn't do. And then the incidents where cops are doing things they shouldn't be doing, only a small percentage are actually caught on video, more than ever before, but still a relatively small percentage. So there's one that I saw this morning, somebody sent to me, and it was a marijuana bust for like an ounce of pot, okay? And it was a high school kid that was about to get arrested. And he sold the ounce of pot or the half ounce of pot or whatever it was. And all of a sudden, these guys come springing out of the bushes. And this young kid panicked, and he puts his car in drive, and he drives. The cop is running alongside the car. Alongside the car. And he goes, press, 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 press. He fires about 6 rounds into this teenage driver of this car. The car goes out of view of the video, and you hear the cop say to another undercover cop that comes jogging across the parking lot, he was trying to run me down. Not even remotely. Number one, the kid was terrified and panicked. Number two, the cop was never in danger of being run down. Number three, he kept pursuing the car. Number four, it's a pot bust of a teenager. You don't murder people over that. You've got his license plate. If you need to let him go home, drive up, park in front of the neighbor's house, call him on the cell phone. Hey, look, Bob, I know you were stressed out, terrified out of your mind, and I know you ran away. You know we got to take you down to the station, right? I'm not your enemy. I'm not going to hurt you. I don't have any guns out. I need you to come out here. Just pretend I'm like a high school counselor. We're just going to go down, and we're going to go to the counselor's office. I got to fingerprint you and book you, man. I know that was terrifying what happened today. But, you know, we got to take you to jail. The guy would probably, all right, I'll come out. Instead, now, he's dead because of a trigger-happy cop who lied and said the kid was trying to run him down. And I hear this stuff all the time. Well, if people would just obey the police, and I've talked about this before, human beings are not robots. This kid panicked, okay? We shouldn't kill teenagers over marijuana because they panic. And we shouldn't, law enforcement shouldn't lie and say he was trying to run me down when the video shows that there was no chance the officer could have been run down. And in fact, the officer was chasing the car, getting closer and closer to the car of his own volition. If he had just stopped, the car would have driven away. Even had he continued to run, he was never in danger of being run down. But it's a cop-out. Now, I personally have witnessed back in my day I personally witnessed a suspect vehicle back up. You know those gigantic dumpsters they use at construction sites? They're like 10 times the size of your like local grocery store dumpster. I actually saw an officer at the end of a pursuit. The car that was being pursued backed up. The officer stepped behind this gigantic dumpster. The car stopped. The driver put the car in drive. The officer stepped out and hosed the occupants of the car. Okay? All the reports went in to say that the officer fired in fear for his life, except my report. My report went in and told the truth, that the officer was in no risk. He waited till the car was out of reverse and placed in drive to step out from behind the large steel object and hose the drivers of the car. And I was asked later by command structure, are you sure you want to stand on this report? Yeah, I do want to stand on the report because it's the truth. There was no video, but there was one report that told the truth. The officer was exonerated. Now, my point is this. We've got this big thing where the temperament has changed towards law enforcement. It's not irreversible. Actually, it'll take a while, but it's not hard. Cops need to stop killing people that don't need killing. There are people who need killing, don't get me wrong. They need to stop beating people who don't need to be beaten. They need to stop lying about what they're doing, like this asshole cop who said he was trying to run me down when such was not even remotely the case. Okay? Fortunately, there's video, and there he may get off at his agency level, but the municipality is going to get hung financially. It's repairable. Stop doing wrong and stop lying. Because even though just a small percent of it is getting out on video, the numbers are so staggering and there's enough of it and it's so shocking that it is changing the temperament of the public towards law enforcement. And I think overall that's a negative. I'd like to see that stop and go back to people being able to trust and respect cops. When a black and white pulls up, a person shouldn't wonder whether the officer is going to show integrity and follow the law. It should be a given. And the only people who can change that, at least as the laws are structured right now, is the law enforcement community. So I don't want to hear any bitching and any whining from the law enforcement community unless they clean up their own act. And so far, it's been a dismal failure. Bill?
The only reason that police are not cleaning up their own act, in my opinion, is that the whole idea of, look, we're our own gang, you know, the behind the shield of blue, if you will, we'll protect our own. If they were to ever come out and even pretend to look like, yeah, we might not have been up to being above board up until now, we're going to be above board now. If they even issue that sort of a presence, I think that's unknown territory and they're afraid to do it. It is totally repairable. I believe it needs to start with new command structures across the country. And we, of course, this is a regular topic that we talk about mm-hmm. on the show. It recurs. We get more emails about this than anything else. And if you take command level structure, it says, look, we're going to hold ourselves to a higher standard. We're supposed to be at a higher standard. That's what this whole industry is supposed to be. We all know we've allowed ourselves to drop to a lower standard. But now we're going to hold ourselves higher. I'm going to hold all of my command level people to a higher level. They're going to hold all their subordinates below that, and then everybody on the street below that. We're going to hold each other all accountable. I want you to hold everybody that you work with, call to call, accountable. And if something isn't going right, let us know, because they're damaging your name, my name, and everybody else's name by not doing it right. We're going to do this thing right, and we are going to absolutely take the higher road and enforce it. Until something like that happens, mm-hmm. and of course, in order to affect that, I think you need to change the psychological standard by the testing of the people that you hire. Because you and I both know the whole idea of 99% of the cops out there are good cops is absolute horseshit. Yes. That is absolutely not true. On a good day, a very, very good day, the good cops make up maybe 20 or 30%. And that's the unfortunate truth.
And then you have the people who argue, and I think with some veracity, that if the good cop, that the good cops are not arresting the bad cops, and the bad cops are allowed to continue on, how are the good cops then good cops?
Yeah, they're not doing the right thing. They're stepping back and they're allowing it to happen. And by allowing it to happen, that is a passable form of acceptance and, you know, encouragement almost.
Do you remember in Tennessee, I think it was early in 2015, that late 40s, early 50s deputy choking out a guy who was compliantly being handcuffed? He'd put his hands behind his back, minding his own business. Yeah, go ahead, cuff me. And the guy choked him into unconsciousness on the ground. And the other two deputies who were this close to it and saw the whole thing go down never reported it, had it not been captured on videotape.
We need more of that. Yep. We'll be back. Here we go. First rant of 2016. You know what really grinds my gears? When people call me Mr. Bill, I am not a Saturday Night Live animated character from a skit from the 1970s. Knock it off. You know what else grinds my gears? When I get people who just want to believe in something or someone, even though the evidence out there shows that's not really the case. Today I'm talking about the assemblyman who represents the Nevada Assembly District 36 here in the area I live in Pahrump. It has quite a bit of Nye County, goes into quite a bit of Lincoln County and a northern chunk of Clark County, a little bit of North Las Vegas and out in Moapa Valley. James Oscarson has been the two-term sitting assemblyman from this district and really a traitor when it comes to conservative Republican principles. This is the single most conservative voting district in the entire state, bar none. We used to have a fellow by the name of Ed Goodhart, great guy, who was the assemblyman here. He actually retired with one or two sessions available to him to rerun. He just didn't do it because there was Democrats always in control, and he just didn't want to have to deal with them anymore. So rather than just pushing against that problem, he decided not to run again. James Oscarson won for the 77th session and then reelected in 78th session, actually ran unopposed. But you know what this guy did? I'll tell you what he did. He voted. There were a total of 32 votes to increase different taxes and fees in the state legislature this year in front of the assembly. 32. James Oscarson voted yes on 29 of those 32. The three he didn't vote for were Assembly Bill 66, Assembly Bill 474, and Senate Bill 476. Those are the only three he voted against. The other 29, more than 90% of the time, he voted to raise taxes and fees to you and me and everybody else in the most conservative assembly district in the entire state. On top of that, he's supposed to be gun-friendly. The fact of the matter is, he actually has a pretty serious anti-gun vote that he cast this last time. And that was for the bill known as SB, Senate Bill 175. There were a number of gun bills that were introduced at the early part of the legislative session. The Senate Majority Leader, Republican Michael Roberson, treacherous, traitor, scumbag of a Republican, in my opinion, absolutely horrible excuse for any kind of Republican whatsoever. And this jackass is now going to be running for Congress in the seat that Dr. Joe Heck currently sits in. He's running for Harry Reid's vacating Senate seat. And for whatever reason, it absolutely blows me away. They must be locked into the same, I guess, group of numbskulls. Joe Heck has actually endorsed Michael Roberson to take his now vacating congressional seat, which drives me nuts. No Republican principles whatsoever in this Roberson guy. Roberson decided to take a bunch of these pro-gun bills and put them all together into a larger omnibus bill known as SB 175 and attach his name to it and then get co-sponsors. Not that he wrote all of those bills, not even close. He just wanted to find a way to try to get an A rating with the NRA, I suspect. Now, the gun bills go through the Senate Judiciary Committee, where they live or die. if they get a hearing, they then live or die, but they can be stopped by not getting a hearing. Then it would go in front of the Senate. Then it would go to the Assembly, where, again, it would go be assigned to, I believe, the Assembly Judiciary Committee there, which it would get a hearing or not, live or die, then go on to the Assembly for a vote. If it passes all of that, then it would go to the governor's desk for him to either vote, I'm sorry, either sign into legislation or decide he's going to veto it or let it sit on his desk and it eventually becomes legislation without his signature. So that's the process. So Roberson decided to throw all this stuff together into an omnibus bill. But the one thing that he didn't add in there was the provision to allow campus carry. This means so you can't be disarmed and set as a victim in a massive gun-free zone on any sort of a college campus in this case. So Roberson purposely stripped this out. And he had Greg Brower, who was the senator in charge of who was chairing the Senate Judiciary Committee, on board. They stripped out campus carry. When it got to the Assembly side, that's where a lot of the Republicans, the true conservatives in the Assembly, decided, you know, we want to put campus carry back into 175. So we would vote to amend to add campus carry into 175, send it back to the Senate. The Senate would have to re-vote on it, on the amended 175. Well, Michael Roberson and Greg Brower went over to some of these assembly people and said, if you add campus carry to this omnibus bill of 175, all the other good gun legislation that's on there, that'll be the one thing that'll kill it. We won't vote on it. Well, a number of the truly conservative in the assembly decided, you know what? We're going to push this because it's got Roberson's name on it. And Brower pushed it through. It's got his name. We really don't think he's going to let this otherwise excellent gun bill die with his name on it simply because of campus carry. So they wanted to vote to put it on there. Well, James Oskinson worked with a few other guys, and from what I'm hearing from these other assembly people, pretty much headed this effort to vote one, to kill the 175 amendment. I'm sorry, the campus carry amendment onto 175 so it would die. Now, knowing how politics works, this is what I see was the most likely scenario. Oskinson and Roberson get together. Roberson says, we're not going to pass 175 with campus carry. Oskinson says, well, you know what? I'm in a very conservative area. I can't cast an anti-gun vote. How do I win this one? And how do I stay in the good graces with the rest of you rhinos? Well, they end up coming together with a plan. Tell you what, James, why don't you do this? This would be Roberson speaking. Why don't you do this? Vote out the 175 and then write a piece of emergency legislation just for campus carry. I'll tell you that we'll promise that it will get a hearing in the Senate Judiciary Committee. I'll promise you that. Okay? Just between us, you can put it out there. That way, you can take out 175 and be a good guy with the rest of us rhinos. And then you can save your own bacon by writing this new AB 487 emergency legislation to try to push campus carry through. And what we do with it is up to us. It's out of your hands. You're a hero. You do what we want you to do. You're our good lapdog. And then you save your own bacon with the voters because you can blame it on us. Because we're not in those districts. We don't care. So that's exactly what happened. James Oskinson led a group of others to kill campus carry off 175. Then it got voted on, passed, governor signed it, went into effect. Some good stuff in there. Then within, it was a day or two, wrote and implemented AB 487, basically resurrected it, gave it a new number. They ended up sending it over to the Senate, and it died right there. It did not even get a hearing in the Senate Judiciary Committee. Greg Brower stopped it. But you got to realize, Greg Brower works for Michael Roberson, who is the lapdog of the governor. So all of this is just the slightest bit of conjecture. Knowing what happens in politics, there couldn't be too many other variables on how this went down. So James knew this. He played ball with a bunch of guys that are real rhinos. He ended up getting together with a bunch of other rhinos and voted for virtually all but three tax and fee-raising items that could possibly come in front of him. You know, there was actually a Democrat that had a better voting record in the assembly than James Oscarson did on these taxes? The truth. I actually have the spreadsheet of every vote of every legislator, both the assembly and the Senate. So when I end up having who is truly a close personal friend of mine who has worked on Oscarson's campaign, been a staff member to help him get elected, then felt absolutely betrayed. Now, this is an individual who was at the governor's State of the State address just a year ago. And we were texting back and forth. While I was here in Southern Nevada, he was at the actual address. Wanted to throw his shoe at the governor, proverbially, because he was introducing all these ideas for $1.5 billion worth of new taxes and fees. And my friend was beside himself. He was there as a guest of James Oscarson. Absolutely beside himself about this. Then James votes. He's been telling us the whole time he's not going to vote for this. He's not behind these taxes and fees. He wants to help find other solutions. And then at the very end, literally the last 3-4 days of the entire 78th session, that's when all the tax votes come up. And that's when he screwed every single one of us, James Oscarson did. Every one of us. That's an extra, what it breaks down to, about $525 for every citizen of Nevada. Of the 2.85 million of us, $1.5 billion, it's right around $525 each. Man, woman, child, infant, elderly, doesn't matter. That's the average. That's coming through a lot of business taxes, business license fees, all this other garbage. So when my buddy wants to bury his head and say, yeah, you know, I've talked to him and he's showed me, now I agree that we needed this money for education. When others of us have shown him, and those of you who watch this show, in past episodes, that this money is absolutely pissed away at the school level, and the unions get almost all of this money, almost all of it. None of it goes to actually educating individual students. And we're going to talk more about this next week. We're not going to be totally unprepared. Dave and I have already talked about some of the wastes that we've seen that are experienced at the school level. They've just packed more money to waste more money here. And now it really grinds my gears that my good friend, this is a guy, like, we hang out. We've been at each other's houses, hang out, smoke cigars. We've gone to concerts together, just hanging out and doing our thing, man. We're just pals. And he is back online with James Oscarson, who gave an anti-gun vote that he knew was not going to pass campus carry. He knew it wasn't going to get resurrected with this AB 487. And who also voted 29 out of 32 times to raise our taxes. And somehow he's been hoodwinked to help this guy get reelected in the most conservative assembly district in the entire state. Baffles me. I wish him well. Still love my buddy. I really do. But I got to tell you, I wish he could wake up and see he's backing the wrong horse. Because I flat guarantee you, I won't back that horse. And anybody that I can get my message out to not back him and to back somebody else, and within the next few weeks, I'll probably let you know who that's going to be. I wish I could get everybody on board with that. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We're now at segment 4. This is the first segment 4 of episode 50. First show 2016.
You said 50 before.
I said 50 at the end of last show, and when I did the last show, I realized, oh man, that was episode 49. This is the real episode 50. This is a segment where we look at your viewer emails that you send here to daveandbillshow@gmail.com. That's where we want you to send your questions, your stories, whatever you want us to talk about. If we agree, we'll do it here on this segment. Also, if you want to watch the show or turn your friends onto the show, I mean, obviously, this is some brilliant dialogue, and of course, we're incredibly handsome. We're some of the best dancers in the world, and just a chick magnets, everything. Every good thing you can think of is this show. We are. At least that's what our producers tell us. So right here, totallyunprepared.info. If you just want to find it, if there's a segment in a show that you like, you can send somebody there and say, hey, it was episode this on that date, and there you go. So totallyunprepared.info, you can watch, you can listen, whatever it is.
I can imagine the station owner coming in here before every show. You guys are handsome, you're articulate, you're intelligent. Yeah,
could you imagine? And this, by the way, we missed that today, so I kind of rah-rah-rah, because they're in the Caribbean.
Oh, are they?
Right, yeah. I saw the Facebook post yesterday. I'm like, He's got to be there to give us a pep talk tomorrow.
Hey, it's a tough life. Somebody's got to live.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know. So let's chat a little bit about, what about the cops that arrested the guy in the park?
Yes.
How about that one?
I think this is really illustrative. This kind of stuff happens all the time. The reason I think it's appropriate to share it here is I think it's going to be highly illustrative to the audience. So let me set it up. There is a public park. There is a part of that park that has all the playground accoutrement for young kids. And that area has a separate fence. And it's got a sign that says no adults are allowed in there. It's against the law, by the way. No adults are allowed in there unless they are with children.
Now, against which law? Is it like a municipal law?
Yeah,
like
it's
a little city law.
Okay. I don't remember. I forget the state and the city
code,
but it's
or something.
Second Federal Circuit.
Okay.
And so
which is in the Northeast.
Is it
Northeast?
I
yeah.
forget where it is.
Yeah.
Okay. So a guy is sitting there and he's eating a snack. And the cops walk in. And they start asking him, what's your name? You have ID?
Was it a snack pack?
Yeah. So they actually named in the article, they named what the snack was, right?
He has a Batman lunchbox and he's eating a snack pack.
So he ignores them. Okay. Now remember, for the audience's sake, there's three kinds of contact. Well, there's two kinds of contacts that break down into three. There is consensual. Means I'm just chit-chatting. You can get up and walk away. If I'm a cop and I come up, hey, man, what's going on? And it's a consensual contact, you can say F you and walk away. Then there's non-consensual. Within non-consensual, I'm either detaining you for reasonable suspicion or I'm arresting you under probable cause. Either case, you are not free to leave, right? Just for the audience's sake. So you got two categories, consensual, non-consensual. For it to be non-consensual, at the bottom entry level of non-consensual, there has to be reasonable suspicion. So they start peppering this guy with questions and he ignores them and keeps eating a snack. They arrest him. Okay. Goes to the Second Circuit. And the headline of the cop...
So that should have gone like municipal court, then probably some sort of state-level court, and then state Supreme Court, and then up to the Second Circuit.
Yes.
So this has gone through several courts.
Yes. And the headline they got me was, you know, court says you're free to ignore cops while eating a snack. Well, that was the headline that caught my attention. And I imagine that a lot of people would be a very, very emotional. Because, look, who doesn't despise pedophilia, right? And whenever there's the whiff of pedophilia,
right.
It's a very emotional thing. So I imagine a lot of people were thinking as they're hearing the story, that's right, if you're in there and you don't have kids and the cops start questioning you and you ignore them, you're going to get hooked up, man. That's what we do to protect our kids.
Haven't established that there wasn't a kid there or not. But just didn't talk.
The law is always important. And what the court eventually decided upon, the basis upon which they decided, was the officer said, we could not visually, as we're looking around, connect him to a child in the play area. Okay. Now, first of all, he was black. So that issues some racist things. What if his child is white in appearance because he's got like a white wife?
Or he adopted a kid,
right?
Maybe he's got a little Asian kid running around in there.
So they said they could not associate him with a child visually. Okay. Well, then what they were trying to say by arresting him, by detaining him, then claiming he was uncooperative with their reasonable suspicion and then arresting him, they were claiming that their lack of information constituted reasonable suspicion. And I've been around the block with cops about this before. They do this a lot, okay? No. Your lack of knowledge, call it information, but it's knowledge. Your lack of knowledge is not reasonable suspicion. Reasonable suspicion, as defined by the courts, is articulatable information that you possess, not a lack of information. What these guys did is they looked around, they couldn't figure it out. And they said in their arrogant cop way, and I talked about this in my rant, they said in their arrogant cop way, since I can't figure it out, reasonable suspicion. No. You have to have something, some minimal level, something figured out to constitute reasonable suspicion.
Let's look at this from a couple of other areas. First of all, to have an area of a public park that says only certain people can go in here, others cannot, That's a little bit janky right there. That might go so far as even Jim Crow laws sorts of things. So to say, look, you as the public, you all pay in, but are you going to say because you have to be a parent of a small child, only parents with small children pay an extra tax so that they can have this? Because everybody's money goes into paying for this park.
Right.
A little bit of an issue there. The next thing that's get rid of that, you got a couple of cops that are standing there trying to get this figured out. If the cops are standing there watching this guy, he's not committing any crimes that he's getting away with.
Right.
So why press it? That's a problem I've got with cops. They always want to press it. They always want to get, they always want to be right. They always want to do whatever they can so that they win the proverbial pissing contest, if you will.
Yeah.
So the guy's sitting there eating a snack pack or whatever the hell it is. I just like saying snack pack. So I'm going to say snack pack. He's eating a snack pack. See how many times I got that in there? And he's just ignoring him, right? Perhaps the guy's deaf. Maybe he doesn't speak English, whatever it is. But because we cannot establish this, we're now going to arrest you. For what crime?
Right.
You can't. Probable cause exists. Probable cause exists. When, which camera am I on? This one? Probable cause exists. When the facts and circumstances known to the officer would warrant a prudent man in believing that a crime had been committed and that the accused had committed it. That is the definition, at least in the state of Nevada, and very common across the United States.
Yes, it is.
These guys obviously didn't have that. For them to even have to take it all, and I wonder which side fought it. I want to know from probably at least four courts that heard this, which one ruled this way, which one ruled that way, and who fought it higher and higher up this chain.
Yep.
Because it seems painfully obvious to me, somebody who's not been to law school, it seems incredibly painfully obvious, having been a cop, that former cop, by the way, Deputy McGill, that I had something on my chin.
Liar McGill.
So it's just painfully obvious that a prudent man would not be warranted to believe that a crime was being committed and that the accuser committed it. Because the guy's just sitting there eating a snack.
Right.
And, of course, the biggest picture, they're standing there watching this guy. If they're keeping eyes on this guy, even one of them keeping eyes on this guy, what's he going to be able to get away with? Is he going to be able to kidnap a kid or anything like that? Or, you know, touch some small child inappropriately and get away with it? No, absolutely not. They're there.
They would say, we don't have time to keep an eye on him. Well, you had time to arrest him?
Of course they did.
And take him down and book him and fingerprint him and be off the street.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, how many times, and I'm sure you have, I've done it thousands of times, have I contacted somebody? I understand when I initiate it, it's consensual.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
Now, they may not understand that, but that's on them, right? I'm not going to mischaracterize it as a detainment when it's consensual. I start conversation with somebody. I ask them some questions. Most people are very cooperative, as you know. However, there were times when somebody said, F you, and walked away. Today's cops seem to feel that they can't cope with that. Even though it's the law, even though that person has a constitutional right to do that. Did he just say F you and walk away? Hoo-ah!
Right.
Okay. How many times did I let somebody walk away? Every time it was consensual, right? Because I understand it's the law. If it's consensual, I can't violate the law. Why am I talking to him if I'm about to violate the law?
You know, here's the thing. We don't know how this consensual stop happened, what the initial contact was. But there's all kinds of ways to approach people. Now, they may have gone up and been very polite. Hello, sir. You know, I'm Officer Carnes. This is Officer Champion. And in this particular area.
May we have a word?
Yeah. May we have a word in this particular area? You have to be a person. And we're just wondering if you have a child here. If that was the way it went, something tells me that's probably the way to go about it.
Yeah.
If they just came up. Who are you with? Why are you here? Put down your snack pack. It could have been,
Let me see some ID.
Yeah, anywhere in between. We don't know how it happened, but in order to elicit things out of people, you want to treat them like people. Treat them with a little
respect.
Always
been my way.
Yeah, it's interesting. In Las Vegas, Metro Police has this thing on the side of the car. It says partners with the community, community policing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes I'll see a cop say, howdy, partner. He'll be looking at me like, what? Do I know this guy? Are we actually, is he? It just, hey, I'm a member of the community. We're partners.
That's right.
Right? So it's just silliness. But if you actually got treated that way, if the cops went up and just, hello, how are you? Nice to see you, blah, da, da, and started a chit-chat, start some dialogue, and then get to the reason. Establish dialogue first, then get to the business.
And what happens these days most often is, yes, Mighty, that's the first thing out of their mouths. And I think they falsely imagine it's creating that officer presence, that verbal command,
sure.
That establishing who's in command. And it's not. It's establishing you're being a butthole.
Yeah.
And for those who don't understand, I think a lot of people imagine when a police officer demands identification, I think a lot of people imagine cops have the right to demand identification anytime they want. Not so. there must be reasonable suspicion that there may have been a crime, and you may have been the person involved in that crime. That's a simplistic explanation of reasonable suspicion. There may have been a crime, that it's got to be articulatable, and you may be the person involved. Again, it's got to be articulatable in some sort of reasonable, rational construct. Okay, before they can ask you for ID. Otherwise, if you're sitting there like this guy on the park bench, eating your food, eating your food, and somebody says, "You got ID?" Exactly what he did is constitutional.
Seems like that's the only thing we got to this week in this segment. Maybe we'll have more time next week to get into more stuff. But we hope you guys enjoyed it. Hope everybody had a great holiday.
Yep.
Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa,
I relaxed.
Festivus, whatever it was. And we'll see you next week.
Take care.